The episode of the Tweenies was filmed in 2001. The BBC says the programme won't be repeated. BBC News.
Open Book discusses Chinese literature and how we can view this emerging superpower through its novels. That's coming up in an hour's time. First on Radio 4, part two of the autobiography An Angel at My Table by award-winning writer Janet Frame. Janet is admitted to a psychiatric ward after revealing in an essay that she had attempted suicide. She is released 3 weeks later, but faced with the prospect of going home, Janet's anxieties return.
The world. The Southern Hemisphere. New Zealand. South Island. Oamaru. Willow Glen. It is cold, even in summer. Broken outhouses rot into a sea of hemlock. My brother's rifle and my father's stomach medicine face each other across the table. Between them, dust motes held in tension. The only evidence of my mother is a tantalising glimpse of sun down on the flat by the creek. A world away. Home. The last place on earth I could be.
Go away. Go away from here. Get her out of here.
This way, Mrs. Frame.
But no one told me that the alternative to going home...
I don't understand. She's such a happy person.
...was committal to Seacliff.
She's always been such a happy person.
I'm so sorry.
The 6 weeks I spent at Seacliff Hospital... I don't belong here... ...were a concentrated course in the horrors of insanity. I knew I would never forget...
...has been a mistake.
...what I saw... entered a foreign land, forced to learn the language and behaviour of the inhabitants.
I don't belong here.
I became she, one of them.
Has been a mistake.
Separated forever from the assurances of everyday life.
I've made gravy.
I left Seacliff in December 1945 on a six-month probation. I found myself in a Willow Glen summer where mother...
You wore yourself out teaching, that's all.
...characteristically denied everything.
Home cooking, that's what you need.
Everyone was pleased when I treated the matter as a joke, talking of a country estate.
They have their own farms, their own cows.
I did not tell them about the back building.
They have their vegetable garden.
The naked men in their paddock.
And their flowers.
A room full of cots with strange children stinking of urine.
There's a magnolia tree in the superintendent's garden.
I didn't mention the TB ward.
That's all behind you now.
I talked of the future, but the university had marked me as...
Failed.
When I tried to apply for sickness benefit...
Denied.
...and my medical certificate stated...
Schizophrenia.
I searched through my psychology book, the chapter on abnormal psychology.
A gradual deterioration of the mind. A lifelong disease... with no cure.
I knew that I was shy, imaginative and inclined to be fearful, more so after recent experiences. I also knew that I was totally present in the real world and whatever shadow lay over me lay only in the writing on the medical certificate. I found a live-in job in Dunedin.
£3 a week. All found.
At a boarding house that cared for elderly women.
And afternoons free.
In the afternoons I would read.
Speaking for Ourselves, an anthology of New Zealand stories, edited by Frank Sargerson.
I would write, inspired.
Speaking for myself.
By being in a land coming alive with its own writing. I went to classes at the university and weekly talks...
How are you, Janet?
...with my former psychology lecturer, John Forrest.
Tell me about this dream you experienced.
John Forrest was my link with the world I had known, and I wanted these talks to continue. So I studied my disease and built up a formidable schizophrenic repertoire.
You are suffering from a loneliness of the inner soul. When I think of you, I think of Van Gogh or Hugo Wolf.
I looked them up. Wolf died insane, and Van Gogh
shot himself in despair at his illness.
My place was set at the terrible feast.
So you are writing poetry?
And stories.
I'd love to read them.
Well, how could I refuse? I possessed all I desired. Time to write, money to live on, inspiration, and, provided I maintained the correct symptoms, a captive audience. It never occurred to me that my less tragic, ordinary, timid self was worthy of help.
So your 6 months probation is over. You're a free woman.
That's wonderful.
And I sent your stories to Dennis Glover. Caxton's Press is interested in publishing.
Really?
You're going to be a writer, Janet.
Then, towards the end of the year, John Forrest announced he would be leaving for the USA.
If you need someone to talk to, you can visit my analyst friend in Christchurch. She's very interested in your case.
I returned to Willow Glen for New Year 1947. Isabel, June and I, summer close, decided to
give Mother a holiday after all she's been through.
Her son's epilepsy and the search for cures. One daughter drowned, one declared mad. The frail husband made strong only by cruelty.
That woman needs a break.
No, no, no. You kiddies keep your money.
We persuaded her to go, and wearing her best costume and a new straw hat, Mother set off with Isabel for Picton.
Goodbye! Goodbye!
Mother's absence was like her death. Dad sat morosely at his end of the table with no one to mix his stomach powder or read the paper to. We missed Isabel too. Her busy preparations for her teaching and her engagement. Her frank opinions on everything and everyone. On the second afternoon, the phone rang.
Isabel.
Swimming in the harbour, had collapsed and
drowned. She's drowned.
There was to be an inquest. Father, Brody, June and I waited for the train from Picton. Towards the end of the platform, by the men's lavatories, the funeral director had backed in his hearse. They lifted the coffin out of the goods van. It was made of lead.
To stop her from smelling,
someone whispered. Although only Isabel herself could have said such a thing. Then there was Mother.
Oh, Lottie.
The hair beneath her new hat turned white. I had to leave Willow Glen and the undercurrent of...
I just hope it doesn't affect poor Janet too much.
I had to deal with my unbearable decayed teeth. I went to Christchurch, where my book was to be published, and called on...
How do you feel today, Janet?
John Forrest, analyst friend. Needing help, I turned on the schizophrenia, full flow.
You heard the voice of your dead sister.
She arranged for me to have my top teeth extracted.
And it might be a good idea to admit yourself, as a voluntary boarder, to Sunnyside Hospital. They have a new electric treatment there, which, in my opinion, could help you enormously.
I signed the necessary papers, woke up toothless, and was admitted to the Sunnyside Mental Hospital, where I was given the new electric treatment. My life shook out of focus. Terrified, I behaved as others around me, for I knew the customs of this land.
Let me out!
Where could I go? I was declared a committed patient, and 1948 was the beginning of the hospital years. I inhabited a territory of loneliness, which resembles the place the dying inhabit before death, from which those who do return bring a unique point of view, a nightmare, a treasure, a lifelong possession. At times,
I think it must be the best view in the world,
ranging even further than the mountains of love, equal in its rapture and chilling exposure. But the very act of returning to the world removes that view to the storeroom of the mind. One remembers the treasure, the Midas effect upon each moment. And sometimes one can see the glitter among the ordinary waste of each day.
Janet? How are you today?
My hair was cropped on account of the lice.
All right.
I was thin, with sores and an infected ear.
I brought you your book. See? Your book. The Lagoon. These are your 6 free copies.
The cover was a beautiful pale blue with links of stalks, like wild grass.
What should I do with them? You should sign them. Really? Underneath your name. Here. Janet Frey. My sister. Published.
I smiled. I was released.
Probationary.
Into June's care.
Sign here.
And we travelled together to South Island, to Willow Glen. I was to stay in the front bedroom. Dad had built me a bookshelf.
I don't want you ever to leave home again.
I was already retreating when my mother...
Lottie!
...had a heart attack. I watched them carry her out, white as china. She was apologising for being ill. Faced with family anguish, I made my usual escape to Seacliff. It was a desperate move, for I had a history, and I was put immediately into the back building, where I became one of the forgotten. When Mother recovered, she and Dad visited for Christmas, birthdays, but it was recognised...
Miss Frey?
I was... in for life.
You have been scheduled for an operation.
An operation?
We believe it will be good for you.
Leucotomy. My mother had signed permission. She had been persuaded by the experts.
We had one patient who was here for years.
Experts who, over 8 years...
Until she had this operation.
...had barely spoken to me.
And now she's selling heads in a head shop.
...had administered no tests.
Selling heads. As normal as anyone.
Who had subjected me to over 200 shock treatments.
Wouldn't you like to be normal?
Who had taken away myself.
Wouldn't you like that, Jenny?
But doth suffer a sea change.
In the ward office, there was a list of those down for leucotomy. My name on the list... getting closer to the top as others were crossed off.
Into something rich and strange.
Matron.
Superintendent Palmer.
Which one is Janet Frame?
Is it this way?
My turn had come.
Please, Dr. Palmer, do you really think I should have it?
What? The prize?
The leucotomy.
Don't you read the papers? You won the Hubert Church Award. Your book.
Instead of being treated by leucotomy...
Lagoon?
I've decided you should stay as you are. We're moving you out of this ward.
I was to be treated as a human being. Returned to the world.
She'll be back here in no time.
Seacliff? This is Seacliff?
I left Seacliff in December 1952. I left the parole patients on the platform. I knew, you see. I wondered, did the other passengers know?
She's been in Seacliff.
I remembered Mother's horror when it was suggested Bruddy should go there.
Seacliff? Never, never. No child of mine will ever go to that place.
But I was a child of hers, wasn't I? And she had signed papers to... I felt uneasy, trying to divide out the portions of family love and discover how much was mine. I arrived at Willow Glen, outwardly smiling and calm, but inwardly with all confidence gone, as a non-person. What could I do if I couldn't write?
Nothing of him that doth fade, but doth suffer a sea change into something rich and strange.
Like self-wrecked Prospero, I was washed up on another island. With my sister June in Auckland.
See those lovely old betches?
Takapuna.
In fact, Frank Sargerson, the author, lives around here.
Speaking for ourselves.
Let's call in on him.
But I couldn't.
Yes, here we are.
And if it felt contrived, it probably was.
Come in. Come in.
Frank Sargerson was a bearded old man in grey pants tied with string.
How are you, Janet?
His smile was kind, but I was overcome by my mental status and by meeting this writer who had so inspired me.
I have an old army hut in my garden. It's no palace, but you'd be welcome to live and work there.
Frank Sargerson, talking to me.
Janet? Well... She's rather shy.
Oh. Think it over, Janet.
The following Friday, I walked through the gap in the hedge, ran the lemon tree.
It's all yours. Get settled in.
And into my new home.
I will pay for my board, Mr. Sargerson. I will get a job.
You have a job. You're a writer.
They've refused me a sickness benefit.
After all those years in hospital? Look, I've a good friend. A doctor, very understanding. He can probably arrange it.
Really?
I felt that Frank Sargerson may have saved my life. Frank, as I came to call him, lived to a strict writing routine. He got up at 7:30. Breakfast was at 8:00. By which time, I was alert and inclined to...
Janet... Please don't babble.
I vowed never to babble again. And after a few weeks of writing regularly, I understood the importance to each of us of holding, maintaining our inner world, renewed on waking.
What are you working on at the moment?
Poems. Some stories.
You should plan your novel.
I bought an exercise book, typing paper.
Green is easiest on the eyes.
And every day after breakfast, I set to work.
Where the peacock fears are kind, here the cowslips will I lie, there I couch when owls do cry.
I was haunted by pictures of great treasure in the midst of sadness and waste. I began to think in fiction of a childhood.
I've made lunch, Janet.
Over our lunch, we discussed books. Proust.
Listen to this.
Tolstoy.
One must believe in the possibility of happiness in order to be happy. And I now believe in it.
I listened. Let the dead. Accepting everything he said, full of wonder at his cleverness. At 3:00, he would go to buy food for dinner. We often had company.
Pretty well non-stop.
Goodness me. Frank had constructed his life perfectly. His surrounding friends brought news from the world he could no longer explore. Taking a seat at a desk every day in silence and solitude. It was many years before I realised how completely and willingly he sacrificed his writing life to help mine. I also realised that protection of others, one person at a time, was a built-in necessity of Frank's nature. With Frank, I had a place to work, to be alone, some money, and the company of someone who actually believed I was a writer. I had everything I desired, as well as the regret of wondering why I had taken so many years to find it. I finished Talk of Treasure 2 weeks before my 31st birthday. With Frank's encouragement...
You'll need to bind the pages.
I sent the typescript to Pegasus Press in Christchurch. 2 weeks later...
Frank! Pegasus Press!
Janet!
There's a contract. What should I do?
Sign it, of course. And then we must celebrate.
Spending more than he could afford, Frank bought a bottle of Vat 69 whiskey, which we drank that evening. But there had been a subtle change of gear.
We had fed the heart on fantasies. The heart's grown brutal from the fear.
Pushed and pulled
more
by obligation, I travelled home for 2 weeks.
Look, Janet, I've been growing chives.
Mother was in fading health. Her future focused entirely on...
A chive sandwich with plenty of butter.
It was not a hope. It was a last request. My father, fear in his eyes, turned to his habitual refuge.
Mum and her chives. Another one for the country estate, eh?
I always knew that the outward dead was not the inward dead. I pitied his inability to ally feelings with words. While, ever the writer, I stored his mockery for future use.
Let's go down onto the flat, set in the sun.
But no, I must start the dinner.
Like Father, I also felt helpless before her illness.
Mum, do you want your chive sandwich or not?
So, with rug and picnic, we set out for the flat. Walking slowly down the path beneath the old ghost pine tree, past the cow byre with its roof of sky, beyond the shadow of the hill, to where the stripling pines lay in the warm sun.
What if the phone rings? We won't hear it down here.
It won't ring, Mother.
We spread the rug, we ate our chive sandwiches, and the little black flies dropped in our tea.
But what about the dinner?
Our picnic was over. Mother struggled to her feet and we climbed back up the path into the claw of everlasting winter. It was a hot, bright North Island summer when June came to the hut to tell me.
She had a stroke at about 6 o'clock and died at 10:30. Bruddy rang to say.
On the deaths of Myrtle and Isabel, we had embraced each other and cried. But I'd been on my own, alone with my feelings for too many years.
Janet?
Mother was ready to die. Her life was awful.
It was. We're not going to the funeral.
No one expected me to. That night, in the privacy of the hut, I wept.
I think your next move should be to travel overseas.
Frank left me alone with my grief, perhaps protecting me from his own.
You're very exposed. I could marry you. Become next of kin. A legal arrangement, you understand. I have no interest in...
Women. I'm sorry.
Frank had offered me a priestly life, devoted to writing. But I did not want celibacy. In hospital, they had tried to negate my mind. Here was another asylum that would negate my body and my gender.
No, you're quite right, Janet. We should apply to the Literary Fund. They may provide a travel grant.
The application was successful.
To Janet's Adventure.
To Janet's Adventure.
Caught up in the excitement, Frank's worldly friends offered their advice.
You should buy
a money belt,
camping cooker,
some metal dishes,
a haversack rather than a suitcase.
There's a boarding house in Clapham Common
with garden rooms, just 17 shillings a week.
If you want to make your money last, Ibiza's the place.
Quells and smelling salts for the voyage.
Here it is, on the map, just below Mallorca, where Robert Graves lives.
I reverted to the submissive, passive role that hospital had forced upon me. I would be taken
by train to Wellington,
by boat to London,
by train to Paris,
by train to Barcelona,
by ferry to Ibiza.
Said quickly enough, it sounded almost possible. And so I was taken by train to Wellington and the disapproval of my Aunt Polly.
Going all that way overseas when your mother has just died. Your place is at home looking after your father.
Father came to see me off.
Janet!
Dad!
Outwardly smart, he wore the inner dishevelment of grief.
Oh, Dad. Poor Dad.
His lip trembled.
My eldest daughter. Going home.
Home? To England.
Thank you for coming, Dad.
I went up on deck of the Ruahine amid the crowds throwing streams. I felt like weeping with fear and delight. Then the motion of the ship changed to a rolling rise and fall. We were on the open sea. My voyage had begun.
Northern Hemisphere, Europe, United Kingdom, England, London.
It was raining, and the black taxis were like hearses. I sat clasping my traveller's joy handbag, bound for
Clapham Common, Cedars Road.
I'm Patrick Riley, the landlady's in Scotland. Yeah, let me help you there.
We wrestled my luggage through the side gate.
I got in here. The kitchen sink.
My typewriter. I'm here on a literary grant.
All right.
We approached the row of garden rooms.
This is you, number three.
Home, sweet home. I hope you won't be in this room for winter. A woman died last year.
The small, damp-smelling shack contained a single bed, a single bulb, a single electric plate and an electric meter.
Actually, I'm just passing through on my way to the Balearic Islands.
You'll not be going alone.
Yes.
No, you shouldn't do that, Janet. Foreign places are all dangerous, even more than London.
He took me into the main house, where I could use the shared bathroom and geyser.
It almost exploded last year. This is my room.
I sat.
Blue top. Jersey Island milk, I buy the best.
Patrick Riley was in his mid-40s.
I wait 5 minutes, no more, no less, for the infusion.
With a smooth, pale face and brown, wellspring eyes.
I like your accent.
I like yours. You see, we're both colonial, Janet. So you understand what the English have done to Ireland. God's own country it is, full of poverty.
But isn't New Zealand God's own country?
Now, if there's anything you want help with, just ask me. I drive the buses. I'm connected. By the way, are you fancy free?
Yes. I'm fancy free.
Good. But riding is not a suitable occupation.
I was grateful to Patrick Riley. He was a natural helper. He was also self-satisfied, bigoted, lonely and religious. He was what my mother would have called a gentleman. He was my first friend in London. I settled into London life. I discovered that Swiss Cottage and Crystal Palace were sadly misnamed, and that Piccadilly was not, in fact, a circus. Letters from Frank Sargerson kept reminding me to visit his worldly friends.
Poets? They're not the types for you. They hang around and do no work, all talk they are. Their morals are no better than they should be.
I'm a writer. Is that what you think of me?
You're different. When you come back from Spain, you'll be getting a real job.
It seemed as if Patrick Riley had sprouted from a handful of New Zealand earth spilled from my haversack.
We can look to our future when you come back.
Patrick Riley had helped me. Now he was trying to take charge of me. Yet he himself was another reject of a demanding world. His last words as we parted at the station were,
"Stay fancy free."
By ferry to France, by train to Paris, by train to Barcelona, by ferry to Ibiza.
I slept my way across the Mediterranean, lulled by the coils of his crystalline streams. In Ibiza, the pension recommended by Frank's friends had a vacant room. I had arrived. My luggage had not. The next day, I walked towards the old city. Saw the buildings across the harbour perfectly mirrored in the clear, tideless ocean. Climbing to the top of a hill, I could see right across the island to the transparent Mediterranean. I shared the solitude with a herd of wild goats and the distant sound of fishing boats. I felt as if this land were mine, and I had known it long ago. Two figures in black shawls approached, gathering twigs. Again, I recognised them, because I had seen them in paintings. I consulted my phrase book.
Buenos dias.
Buenas tardes.
Buenos tardes. Yo soy de Nueva Zelanda.
Nueva Zelanda.
Janet. Quiero habitación.
Habitación.
Sí.
Podría probar Ignacio. Ignacio.
Sí.
Tendrá bastantes
turistas. Anxious to resolve their suspicion, I said.
No soy turista. Soy escritora.
Ah, escritora. Sí. El patrón.
El patrón.
Sí.
They took my arm.
Ven con nosotros, Janeta.
It seemed they were taking me to their landlord.
La cocina?
Who would rent me the house next to theirs.
Su lavado?
Sí.
Su dormitorio?
The bedroom was large and airy, with a wide window overlooking the harbour, the distant shore, and its mirrored city.
Do you have bagajes?
Perdidos?
Oh, perdidos! Una tragedia!
I became his unfortunate, shipwrecked guest. I was experiencing the drama of arrival and its place in myth and fiction. The loss seemed unimportant beside the fictional gift of the loss. As if within every event lay its reflection. As if our lives contained mirror cities revealed to us by our imagination, the envoy. Loss became revelation.
Pica el tomate, vale. Yo voy a picar la cebolla.
Misfortune, my advantage.
Sí, tú haz nada como siempre, mujer.
Catalina and Francesca introduced me to the market, to local foods. And Ibizan cooking.
No fuerte, no. No, no, rápido, rápido.
I hired a bicycle and explored the island, stopping to rest at a small pine-bordered beach. The light fell like blue and green snow. The sea glittered. Not an unusual scene, but it touched the antenna reaching from childhood, a telescoping within the economy of memory. Now, when I listen to pine trees by water in light and blue, I feel the shiver of yesterday, the fullness of being and loving and losing and wondering why was the world that haunted me in childhood. Yet I remember the pine trees of Ibiza. The future, present and past telescoped again. When John Forrest wrote to offer me an appointment at the Maudsley Psychiatric Hospital in London. a world away, gazing across Mirror City. I knew myself to be well, but perhaps the Maudsley could shed light on my diagnosis, or even overturn it. The spring wind was scented by almond and avocado blossom, and at home,
Janeta,
something else blew in.
El Americano.
Hi, I'm Edwin Mather. I'm in the studio upstairs.
Studio?
I'm a painter.
I'm Janetta. Janet.
Oh.
I hadn't spoken English for 3 months.
I live in the front room. I'm a writer.
El Americano. Oh, I felt betrayed, unprotected as English words crowded into my head.
We have to share the kitchen and the john outside, right?
He also thought he had rented the whole house.
Apparently.
Then I guess we just have to get along.
I didn't mean to be hostile, but the link between the world of living and of writing is a high wire. Needing intense, relaxed concentration, the presence of others is a dangerous intrusion. Thankfully, Edwin was industrious. He painted most of the day while I wrote. And when we met in the kitchen, he or I would ask,
Query al fuego?
Soon the kitchen shelves became crowded with luxury food that set Catalina and Francesca aquiver with excitement.
Who are those two old women?
They live next door.
But they just wander in and out.
Our fire's the only means of cooking. You should taste their paella.
Edwin also complained, not unreasonably, about the light bulbs.
Oh, it is like living in a cave.
He searched the town for better bulbs, which instantly blew all the fuses in the house. That wasn't his only misdemeanor. There was also the beautiful, worldly Eva.
La Diabla.
Who stayed the night, and the bedsheets had to be washed.
Una desgracia.
Catalina was pleased I was not like
Los Americanos,
but a hard-working escritoria with wrists like railway sleepers.
You about that.
Sexless as a block of wood.
Hi.
Oh, Janet, this is Bernard. He's helping to bring Freud into Spain.
Ignore him. He's a communist. Would you like a glass? It's my birthday.
Many happy returns.
That night, Bernard's laugh rumbled through my dreams. The next morning, unable to work, I made marmalade.
Hi. I hope we didn't keep you awake.
Not for long.
As I bent over the pan, I caught him staring down my dress.
I don't think I'll be getting much work done today.
What do you do, really?
Back home, I'm a history professor. But I'm really a poet. I've written several poems since I've been on the island.
He was still staring at my breasts.
It's a beautiful spring day. Let's go for a walk.
So, picture me by the Mediterranean, with a tall, grey-eyed stranger talking of travel.
Oh, you speak French.
And poetry.
Now in Inge's sunny clime, where I used to spend my time, a servant of Her Majesty the Queen.
I was a little disappointed when he quoted Kipling, but
what about Auden?
Oh, Auden!
Follow, poet, follow.
Picture right me, a woman of 32, blue-eyed, in a blue dress,
pleasant man would hold,
barefoot on the sand.
Sir, may we touch the little girl's hair? It was so red.
Oh, innocent Vincent Millay.
So very red. May I touch?
I try to preserve my image of his perfection, created from the day, the circumstances, the sunset over the sea.
There's my villa.
I was new to seduction.
We can light a log fire.
I felt the finality, the cliché. When he gripped me, pressed against me, I struggled.
I've only just met you. I don't know. I don't...
Kissed me. His hands finding the right places until I responded. Bernard's erect penis was now dressed in a condom. Why is he so prepared, carrying them around like indigestion tablets? But I did not want to forego my new experience, and so I suffered and enjoyed shocks and surprise that were lessened by the addicting sensations. After that, I spent every night, most days at Bernard's villa. I saw the disappointment of Catalina and Francesca. I had joined Los Americanos. I was Bernard's woman, Diablo.
Quiera el fuego?
I don't hear your typewriter. I miss it. Aren't you working?
I'm doing research.
I hope you know what you're doing.
I felt that I did. Until one night.
I've run out of supplies.
What does it matter?
I said recklessly. Then after, I wondered.
What if I do have a baby?
Well, that would be terrible. A baby would be terrible.
That night was the last I spent at the villa. I returned to El Patron's, found a key to the front door, unlocked it.
Janet! Janet!
Edwin and I went back to our routine of writing and painting and blowing the fuses.
Guerre al fuego.
It's dark.
He's leaving tomorrow.
Take him some flowers.
My memory of Bernard was not the Midas touch, but the touch of ash.
If you can't work here, you could try Andorra. With the free money market, your grant would go further. If it needs to.
My compass swung, bound to a magnet of reality. And my possible plight. Ascending the foothills of the Pyrenees, the light was choked by dark pines. And my Ibethan spring became a mirage. As we climbed into snow, the regression to winter, to an inescapable prison, seemed fitting for a woman of 32, alone and possibly pregnant. I thought Andorra would be a large town.
Muchas gracias.
But my journey ended in a village square surrounded by mountains.
Por favor, quiero habitación.
I began to walk. I met a young man. He beckoned me to follow. He, Carlos, took me to his home, where I was given the children's room. The spare bedroom was already rented to another lodger, Il Vici Mario. But they were grateful for my extra pesetas. I nested into my feather bed and tried to plan a future that included a child. I bought wool, needles, a French book of instructions.
Pour le premier âge, ensemble d'exécution.
A month passed. I became part of the family's routine, fetching milk, preparing meals. On Sunday, I wore the mantilla in church. In the evenings,
un tiempo muy,
I told the children stories.
Once upon a time,
I scrambled recklessly up and down the mountains.
Perigo, danger, avalanche.
I learned about these mountain passes from Il Vici, who was a smuggler. My naivety gave this a romantic aura. I hoped and denied my hope and grew increasingly fearful and pleased at my condition. It was the need for light that solved the dilemma. Thinking of Edwin, I bought a bulb of higher wattage, climbed up on a chair to reach, and became dizzy. I fell. The blood was bulky.
Here's the smell of the bloodstone. The perfumes of Arabia will not sweeten this little hand.
I collected it in a towel and flushed it down the lavatory, pulling the chain several times before it shredded and vanished. Weak and sick, I lay in my feather bed and watched the late snow falling. I did not realise until the baby had gone that I had accepted it and was preparing for it. I knew a feeling stronger than regret, but not as intense as a bereavement. I know woman's land, where a marvellous sense of freedom sprang up beside hate for myself.
Janet, you are pale. You need fresh air.
In loss, I accepted Elvici's offered company.
Come with me.
I was prepared to like this handsome man with his gift for languages.
I know a path.
We walked into the mountains and picnicked in the snow.
Janet!
Get off! What do you think you're doing?
But you go with me. No woman go in the mountains with a man unless she wish to be lovers.
Well, that's not the way it is in New Zealand.
Siamo differente. Here women do not go out alone as you, walking and walking. No, nel futuro, in the future, I will walk by your side. You are Andorran now,
he said.
Andorra is your home.
He knelt before me.
This ring belonged to my grandmother.
Hospital had removed a decade from my life.
I cannot accept this gift.
Now, too late. I was behaving like a woman in her 20s.
But can you accept my love?
Giving in to a greedy impulse.
Yes?
For love at any cost. It was concluded that we were engaged and would be married in the church. With a sense of panic, I explained I had
things to do in London first.
In mid-May, on the very morning the road reopened, I boarded the small mountain bus to Perpignan. The snow lay in two high walls either side of the road, and the snowplough cut through the blue light. I emerged from a veil of darkness. The trees were light green. It was springtime, as it should be. Patrick Riley met me at Waterloo Station.
We rented a room for you. Was that presumptuous?
I had been away from London for 9 months. Returning, I knew what I wanted to achieve. I arranged an appointment with John Forrest's contact at the Maudsley. Next, I consulted the Writers and Artists Yearbook and selected a literary agency.
A.M. Heath Associates.
Patience Ross agreed to represent me.
What else are you working on?
And to submit Owls Do Cry to English and US publishers.
Janet Frame to see you, Doctor.
A few days later, I went to the Maudsley Hospital. I needed to know if I had ever suffered from schizophrenia, and I knew that my story could be used to accomplish my wishes.
How did you come to be hospitalised?
I attempted suicide.
Right.
Such talk came readily to me as a shortcut to ensure action.
They diagnosed me schizophrenic.
It was the doctor's opinion that I should become a patient at the Maudsley for observation.
On a voluntary basis.
My plan had succeeded.
I will stick by you, Janet. You can keep your baggage in my room.
In the Maudsley observation ward...
Hello, Janet.
The ratio was one professional nurse...
Would you like a cup of tea?
...to five patients.
OK, Janet, now just take your time.
I was interviewed by doctors daily.
And now look at this card.
They also obtained my records from New Zealand and gave me tests as an aid to diagnosis. Remembering my days in Seacliff, treated like a prisoner or animal, I was amazed.
Excellent.
Finally, I was given the verdict.
You have never suffered from schizophrenia. You should never have been admitted to a mental hospital. Any problems you now experience are mostly a direct result of your hospitalization.
I felt as if I had won a prize until I realized something had been taken away.
You have never suffered from schizophrenia.
I had been stripped of a garment I had worn for 13 years. Even when I did not wear it openly, I always had it by for emergency, for shelter from the cruel world. And now it was gone. The truth was more terrifying than the lie. How could I ask for help when there was nothing wrong with me?
Any problems you now experience are mostly a direct result of your hospitalization.
That final proclamation saved me. I still needed help. I spent the winter...
I brought you some new slippers. Chocolate biscuits.
In the warmth of the Maudsley.
But I don't understand why you're staying here.
I did not wish to live in the same house as Patrick Riley, who...
There's nothing wrong with you.
...threatened to take over my life.
You should come home.
Like a bumptious parent.
I'll take care of you.
My doctor had said...
Your father was a bully, and so is Riley.
I told Patrick it would be better if he no longer came to see me. I had been assigned to Dr. Corley. He was polite, kindly. He was interested in the here and now, not theories about the past.
It is my view that you generally need to write.
I do.
That is not a literary judgment, Janet. It is an observation. Writing is a way of life for you. And the best practical help I can give is to arrange national assistance.
And so, I was able to leave hospital and rent a room in a lodging house.
In your ideal life, you would simply live alone and write.
That's all I've ever wanted. But isn't that wrong? Shouldn't I get out and mux?
Only if you wish to. There has never been any question of you being able to exist in the real world. The problem comes when doing that deprives you of your own world.
In 1960, I began to write the story of my experiences in hospital. I recorded faithfully the events, the patients and staff I had known. But to build a more incredibly mad central character, I borrowed from what I had observed in other patients. The book was written quickly. When I finished Faces in the Water, I showed it to Dr. Corley.
It's not brilliant, but it will do. Don't rely on my opinion. Show it to your agent.
I did as he advised, and Patience Ross accepted Faces in the Water for publication. Feeling daily more secure in my world, I began writing a new novel. The publication of Owls Do Cry was greeted with silence. Faces in the Water, however, did attract attention. It was assumed that the central character was me.
Surely the use of the first person was a mistake. I mean, a woman who has been what this woman has been would never be able to remember and write about it in this way.
At the same time, my agent and my publisher asked for contradictory revisions to the edge of the alphabet. And so I realised something else about writing. Each decision a writer makes must be as individual and as solitary as birth and death. What was the use of my having survived as a person if I could not maintain my own judgment? It was 1962. I had written 3 novels in 2 years. I received a letter from my London publisher.
I'm Mark Gordon.
Arranging a meeting.
Care for a drink?
I thought he looked like a spiff.
Your books have had excellent reviews.
A work of genius.
But they don't sell.
Unreadable in the worst sense.
I hope that one day you can write as a bestseller. We could give you an apartment. You deserve success, Janet.
The South Kensington basement apartment was quiet and luxurious. There were striped Regency sofas and a white entry phone to keep out the world. It didn't keep out the letter from my sister.
So very sorry to tell you. Dad has passed away. He collapsed and was taken to hospital.
Oh, Dad.
He was suffering a hemorrhage from a stomach ulcer.
Poor Dad.
Poor, difficult, bullying, loving Dad. Alone in Willow Glen. With his mockery and his stinking fish bag, and his face wobbling with tears at Wellington Wharf. A few days later, I had a letter from the lawyer.
We hope you can return forthwith to New Zealand, as you, Janet Frame, are sole executor of your father's estate.
But if I go back, they could say I'm a schizophrenic. They could lock me up.
The Maudsley verdict offers some protection, but you do have a history. I think you've already made up your mind.
New Zealand is finding its own first voice in the landscape. There's nowhere else I can write about so intimately.
So you are returning for literary reasons?
Yes.
Then buy a return ticket, Janet.
I had been away from New Zealand for 7 years. But I had no close friend to ever say goodbye.
Sexton Blake turned up his collar.
As the ship moved down the Thames, I thought of Dad.
The docks were deserted.
How he would have relished a description of the docks.
Swirled up the Thames.
His world, from the cheap detective stories we had shared in my childhood, of unsavoury characters, narcs and tip-offs.
All right, Gov.
So it was not Dickens or Keats who farewelled me from London.
Spit it out.
It was Sexton Blake.
What have you got for me, Sykes?
While I, in turn, wave goodbye to my father, huddling on the dockside in the dubious company of his fictional heroes.
Question is, what have you got for me?
My homecoming was as sad and desolate as I knew it would be. Yet I relished its importance to the envoy from Mirror City, that watching self, the envoy who was looking over my shoulder across the glittering flat, waiting to guide me to my fictional home.
You be quiet. Was Grandad's trying to sleep?
Once upon a time, there was a king.
Only the poets know, kiddies. Only the poets.
Oh, can I see?
Yeah. Look at the pattern. It's tiny.
In An Angel at My Table by Janet Frame, adapted for radio by Anita Sullivan, Janet Frame, the narrator, was played by Lorraine Ashbourne, younger Janet Frame, Anna Skellen, mother, Barbara Ewing, father and Frank Sargeson, Dennis Lill, Patrick Riley and Bernard, Rory Conahan, John Forrest, Mike Sengalil, Aunt Polly, Federy Holmes, Dr. Corley and Edwin, Richard Lang, Elvici, Daniel Philpott, June Celeste Wong, Bruddy William Alexander and Catalina Celia Miris. All other parts were played by members of the cast, with thanks to Houghton Valley School and Wellington High School, New Zealand. The associate producer was Andrew Forster, the producer Karen Rose. An Angel at My Table was a Sweet Talk production for BBC Radio 4. After the news, Open Book.